This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm here today with Dr. Danielle Fenech. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Melanie.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
So, Danielle works on Starburst Galaxy M82. Can you tell us more about this galaxy? What's special about it?
Okay, M82 is actually a nearby starburst galaxy, the closest to us in the Northern Hemisphere. And it's a starburst because it's currently undergoing active star formation, and it has a much higher star formation rate, so it's producing stars at a much higher rate than our own galaxy does. And that means we get to study a lot about the processes of star formation, and in particular for me, the end points of star formation when stars reach the ends of their existence and explode as supernovae and form supernova remnants, so the remains of a supernova explosion.
And what's so interesting about studying supernova remnants?
Well, they tell you about the processes of star formation in the galaxy. They tell you about the effects of star formation on the galaxy, and you can use them to probe the interstellar medium within the galaxy itself.
What do you mean by probe the interstellar medium?
You can study what kind of environment the interstellar medium is, so what kind of gas pressures and densities there are. And in M82 in particular, it's very interesting because the level of star formation and the level of and the numbers of supernova explosions are so high that they actually cause a mass ejection of gas out of the galaxy itself in what's called a superwind.
And?
Well, that's particularly interesting because then you start to understand how a high active star formation region can produce effects that not only change the environment within a galaxy, but dump material out of a galaxy into the intergalactic medium and affect the galaxy clusters and nearby galaxies to it.
So those supernova explosion, it's kind of the way we spread new material or spread new molecules in the universe, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We would not be here without the fact that stars before our sun, before, in fact, the ones we're now studying, had not gone through their lives and exploded as supernovae and become supernova remnants. That is the only way you get things like carbon, which is what we're made from, out into the wider universe. We would not be here if it were not for exploding stars.
You talk about the life of a star. Can you give us the steps of the life of a star from birth to, like, how long is it and what are the different steps in the evolution of a star?
Okay, well, the stars that we see in M82 are slightly different from our own sun in that they are much more massive. To begin with, they're typically 8 to 10 solar mass stars and can be up to several tens of solar mass stars. And that means that their evolution is slightly different from our sun. But the evolution of any star is dictated by the nuclear fusion process, and it starts off with mostly hydrogen coalesced into forming the star, which eventually under its own gravitational collapse will ignite and start to produce radiation. That reaches an equilibrium and you end up with, in a situation not dissimilar to our sun, with a star existing for a certain period of time, fusing hydrogen and emitting radiation. Once all of the hydrogen is used up in that way, it actually produces helium and the star will collapse further under its own gravitational pull and start to use the helium in the nuclear fusion to produce more radiation. A massive star like those in M82 will go through that process, fusing higher and higher mass elements until it reaches a point where it can no longer sustain its own gravitational pull by the fusion process. That's the point at which it collapses in on itself and actually rebounds off of the central dense core, which is what the supernova explosion is.
That point of explosion, is it the same for all stars?
Well, yes and no. It will go through the nuclear fusion process, the same for massive stars. As I said, the Sun's a lower mass star and will actually have a slightly different process. But ultimately, it will depend on how massive the star was to begin with. So an 8 solar mass star is probably going to live a little bit longer and will go through the process slower than something like a 100 solar mass star, for example.
So you observe those supernova remnants in radio, right? Why radio?
Radio specifically because M82, like our own galaxy, in fact, has a large amount of gas and dust. And with a particularly high star formation rate, it produces a lot of gas and dust. And the main starburst activity in M82 is right in the center of the galaxy. And because of the obscuration that optical wavelengths, for example, suffer because of the gas and dust, they just can't see into the center of the galaxy. Whereas with the radio, we can see right through it, and we can literally see right into the center at very high resolutions and pick out individual supernova remnants that are just completely obscured in the optical.
Is there any other wavelengths that's interesting to study supernova remnants?
In M82, certainly in general, yes. I mean, there's activity that's observable and at all wavelengths, really, and different wavelengths can tell you different things about which particular region you're studying in terms of a supernova remnant. It's difficult to do, as I said, in M82 because of the obscuration and because it's not on our doorstep. It's not the same as observing supernova remnants in our own galaxy. But you can equally well with infrared observations and submillimeter observations start to resolve individual supernova remnants in the center of the galaxy.
I have a question about the different starburst galaxies in general. You said that you can infer the rate of star formation. Is the star formation, what is it triggered by? Is it just from a merger, or is there other way to trigger star formation?
Generally, there are a few ways that you can trigger a star formation. In particular, for M82, it's having a tidal interaction with another galaxy. It's part of a group which is known as the M81, M82 group of galaxies. And M82 and M81 have passed particularly close by on galactic scales, or intergalactic scales, in fact. And in the same way that the Moon has a tidal effect on the Earth, the gas is being moved around and tidally moved by the interaction with M81 in terms of M82. Other than that, there are more distant starburst galaxies, such as ARC-220, that have a massive merger. So you've literally had the situation of two galaxies running right into each other. Now, that obviously has a very turbulent effect on the gas and in the galaxy, and so can trigger a lot of star formation as well. Galaxies that have supermassive black holes at their center can also trigger star formation near the actual nucleus, near the black hole, as a function of the activity of the black hole taking in and accreting the gas from the rest of the galaxy as well.
What determines how much starburst there will be in a galaxy? Is it the size of the galaxy? Is it the amount of gas? Or is there anything in particular?
Well, it's sort of both, in that the larger a galaxy, typically the more gas it has. But the level of starburst, or at least the extent of a starburst, is very much dictated by how much gas is available. If you have a finite amount of gas in any given galaxy, you can only sustain a starburst for as long as there is gas to produce stars with.
So when you look at a starburst galaxy with a radio telescope, what you'll see is all the supernova remnant. Is that the only thing you use to determine the star formation in this galaxy?
Actually, no. When you look at M82 in particular, for example, but it's the same for any starburst galaxy. In the radio specifically, you pick out not only the individual supernova remnants, but also regions of ionized gas. And they are themselves a obvious identifier of current star formation. They are regions produced from stars ionizing their surrounding medium, and you can pick those out in the radio as well.
What would be, ideally for you, the one thing you'd like to see in M82 that would answer all your questions?
Answer all of my questions. That's a difficult one. Although, in particular, one of the sources that I've been looking at in M82, and people before me have as well, and I'm sure people after me will too, is a particular source, 41.95 plus 57.5. Very uninteresting name, but it's a phenomenally interesting object. It, up until the 1960s, dominated the emission, the radio emission of M82 as a whole, in and has since been decaying at around a rate of 8.5% a year. So is about the same luminosity as many of the other sources now, but it doesn't look like a normal supernova remnant as we'd expect it to. It seems to be bipolar and not shell-like, which is what you'd expect from a uniform explosion. And we currently have no complete explanation for what that source could be. It's possibly been associated with a nearby gamma ray burst. If you extrapolate the information we have back to the time that you'd expect it to have exploded, if it is a gamma ray burst associated with a supernova event, then it would have been much brighter than any known supernova explosion in M82 on the level of a gamma ray burst, but it would have to still have had an unusual for a gamma ray burst event. And in terms of detecting those in the nearby universe, well, there aren't any. They're all very high redshift, very distant events. So it's mostly speculation at the moment in terms of what that actually is, but it's a very unusual source and a very interesting source.
That sounds really cool. So an X-ray binary gamma ray burst. Is that the only explanation, the only thing you could think of for this weird source?
Well, I mean, no, there are other possibilities that it just happens to be an unusual supernova event, in that it's quite a normal, possibly, in the ranges of supernova events. And it's just that the way that we observe it and the way it seems to us and the information that we can actually get from it, we don't have a complete picture. I mean, there is another object, another supernova remnant, in fact, in another nearby galaxy that's also shown some similar characteristics to this particular source in M82. And actually, what that has turned out to be is a particularly bright core remain. So in fact, they think it's possibly a pulsar or a black hole at the center of the supernova remnant that's become observable. And so it's having an unusual effect in terms of how we actually see the source. Now, it's expected for most of the supernova remnants that you will get that kind of core remained once it's thrown off the outer shells from the original star, that you will actually end up with some form of neutron star or black hole at the center. But it's not often detected, and certainly not in galaxies outside of our own. I mean, obviously, there's some reasonably famous supernova remnants within the galaxy where this is already observed. But that is... This SN1986J is the supernova remnant, the supernova event that this has been associated with. But the characteristics of that particular supernova remnant don't completely match up with the one in M82. I mean, again, it shows some very similar characteristics, but it doesn't give us the whole explanation just yet.
So what kind of information would you need to get a definite answer?
We'd need... certainly more detailed monitoring of its evolution to try and study what's going on in terms of its decay and luminosity, and any evolution structurally in terms of whether or not it's expanding, which is what you expect a supernova remnant to do, because obviously it was an explosion, it threw off the material outward, you expect it to keep going. And if that's not the case, why it would have slowed down, and why such a massive decay that is in fact still continuing. Most of the other supernova remnants, certainly the younger ones in M82 even now, have reached a reasonably stable part of their evolution in terms of their luminosity, whereas this source hasn't. Also, we'd need higher resolution and better fidelity images to be able to pick out any, and to see if there is actually any radio emission other than just the bipolar structure that we're seeing. So, for example, if there is a faint pulsar or black hole in the centre of it, or if in fact it does have a complete shell and we're only being able to pick out what is the more prominent bipolar emission. More observations is always the answer.
Wow, M82 sounds like a really cool galaxy to study.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Danielle.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
bye.